Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how coenzyme Q10 is linked with improved physical capacity, reduced cardiovascular risk, especially among people over the age of, let's say, 50. A study just published in the Antioxidant Journal found that lower levels of blood factors related to cardiovascular disease and greater physical capacity in among participants with higher levels of coenzyme Q10. That's a big factor because why? Your heart, your muscles, your brain needs energy. Now, inside every cell are a lot of little cells called mitochondria, mitochondria. Those are the cells that give us the burst of energy, what is called ATP, adenosine triphosphate. And if you have plenty of coenzyme Q10 and L-carnitine, and if you're having a normal amount of complex carbohydrates in your diet, when they break down, they also provide glucose. So the higher levels of coenzyme Q10 were significantly associated with a lower level of non-HDL cholesterol among women, and also you're going to have a better sense of your heart is being fed the nutrients it needs. So, one more point for coenzyme Q10. I suggest twice a day, once in the morning, once in the evening. Now, for athletes, because you're really forcing your heart to pump hard in order to get your aerobic exercise in, and especially when you're doing some intense exercising, meaning you're speeding up, you're going fast, whether it's biking, jogging, running, then your heart needs that extra energy. And coenzyme Q10 can help supply that. A new study from Oregon State University shows that if you're deficient in zinc, which is not difficult to get, then it's going to be impacting your immune system in a negative way. That's not good, especially if you're an older person. But here's the question. When do you become older? Now, here's the little trick to this. After examining all the scientific literature on the aging process for a new documentary that I have coming out in the next 2 months, zinc is easy to get. It's one of the most important minerals that you can put in your body. It helps with the immune system. It helps with antiviral activity. But then we start thinking, okay, well, don't young people get enough zinc? And what would happen if they don't? Well, aging really starts at the age of 27. So at the age of 27, in effect in your mid-20s, you're already advancing in the aging process. And as I'm sure many of you have recognized, when you weren't paying close attention and really doing all you could to try to slow down the aging process, you started to see the circumference increase around your belly, the body mass index. You start to see some weakness and fatigue in muscles. By the mid-40s, you're starting to forget things. You're starting to have fatigue, more likely to have some hormonal changes, perimenopause or menopause in your late 40s or 50s. And women are getting into menopause, perimenopause younger now because their body is so depleted in nutrients and so lacking in vigor and good health. You're out of hormone balance. And instead of rebalancing their hormones naturally, by making changes to turn off inflammation, like eating toast or potato chips or french fries or colas or coffee or alcohol. All of these things adversely affect the hormone levels, the nutrient levels, and the health of our systems. So therefore, you're prematurely aging. So once again, you may think you're one age, your chronological age, you're 35, you're 40, you're 70. You're not. You're a biological age. In fact, last night I was speaking with a very close friend whose mother is now in hospice care. Her mother is 96, and we were having a conversation about what it means to have spent quality time in a healthy, good relationship through her entire life with a mother that was intelligent, adventurous, caring, always creative. And now that she's at the end of that lifespan, and without pain, and she is in the process of passing, there's a sadness, absolutely, anyone would be, but there's also an understanding that there's not resentment, self-resentment, about I took that relationship for granted, I didn't give it the time and energy it deserved. And that's just a little takeaway message for today. If you have a cat or a dog, a bird, a horse, whatever animal you have in your life, don't take it for granted. Because the probability is, unless it's a macaw, like that macaw over my shoulder, that can live 75 or more years, and she's 22, and there's going to come a time when one of you are going to pass. And when a creature that has given us unconditional love passes, it's just like a human. It really affects us. Sometimes more because they're always good. In fact, yesterday I posted up on GaryNall.com and Progressive Radio Network, PRN.live, I posted a short little clip. It's only about 3 minutes long, and it's of a little monkey, baby monkey, showing how that monkey spends a day. And it's just adorable. It warms your heart. It gives you a sense of pause. That if some creature, some sentient being can be that kind, that loving, that curious, that nurturing, why can't we also? I can tell you, I've raised monkeys like that. Many of you who've come down to Texas back in the 1980s, remember those monkeys? One of them's still alive. And they were just wonderful to be around. They're curious. They have to have a stimulating environment. They can also have emotions like people. They can get depressed. And that's why they were out all day. I'd only put them in at night to protect them from predators. But never take your pets for granted. Never take your friends for granted. I had a friend call me. I haven't spoken with this person in about 6 years. But for a lot of years, that person was a regular friend. And that meant that every week for probably 20 years, a bunch of us would get together, have dinner, laugh, have a joyful time together, and then go to a movie or a play. And we walked to these places. We gave ourselves a whole evening, like 7 hours together. And some were medical doctors, artists, actors, a full spectrum of backgrounds. And it was just the fact that you were with someone you enjoyed being with. Now, over time, a lot of those people passed. And the person called me and said that, boy, did they miss all that inner reaction and that joy and love that was shared, the laughter, which was nonstop, the interesting conversations. And I said, what happened? Well, I get into a relationship and... unfortunately, the person in the relationship was a little jealous and didn't want me, out except with that him, and that was it. And then the person said, I understand that some of the people that I used to really enjoy, Manette Loudon, Virginia Reed, Tom Larson, Neil Kramer, some of those people passed. I said, yeah, about 9 passed in the last 4 years, and then 4 more passed, going back a little further. And the person says, I think about that and I'm angry at myself that I didn't. These people were wonderful and they were meaningful. And I'm in a highly contentious relationship that didn't have the same joy and laughter and fun and openness. And I said, well, now, I'm coming back in June and we're going to all get together again. There are probably about 6 of us. And even invite new people. You should always be open to new relationships, always new friendships, especially the older you get, because you're going to find that people go their own way, they move out of the area, and start to lose contact. Don't take any of that for granted. All right? That's important. Anyhow, as we age, we sometimes forget all the things that were important at one time that now we don't think about that could be important again. And one of them is keeping your health. And keeping your health means you've got to be able to pay attention. Take a simple blood test. It's inexpensive, $100, $150. And you know, if you have enough vitamin D and C and zinc and magnesium and the calcium, the nutrients that will keep you younger, longer, healthier, longer, and prevent cardiovascular disease, cancer, and diabetes that are involved with inflammation, and zinc deficiency allows for inflammatory responses. Something that simple, 20 milligrams of zinc a day, makes a difference. But as I was saying, a lot of people are going through premature aging and not even aware of it because they've adapted to it. Now, there's two types of adaptation. One is a constructive adaptation. You're in a new job, you're in a new neighborhood, you're around people you don't know. You want to make some friends. We need friends in our lives as part of our support system. And there's an uncertainty, and the older you get, the more difficult that uncertainty is, because you look in the mirror and you don't see the same desirable characteristics you may have seen that society said was important, like looks and hair and skin, muscle, our physical attractiveness to one another. But that's maladaptation. Proper adaptation is you're looking for something that is more meaningful than just looks, because all of our looks are going to change over a period of time. Depending upon how we age, they can go faster or slower, be more extreme. But there's still behind that skin and bone and muscle, there's a wonderful human being. So you got to have friendships of the heart, not just of the conveniences. Take no one for granted, especially those who are aging. So make sure you get your zinc, because that controls inflammation, and that can activate responses that either promote inflammation if you're deficient in zinc, or tame inflammation if you've got your zinc. Okay? Something that simple can make an enormous difference in how we age and the problems we have. And of course, the researchers in this study found that reducing zinc caused improper immune cell activation and dysregulation of the cytokine interleukin-6, a protein that affects inflammation in the cells. So you want less inflammation? Make sure you get your zinc. Also, from Boston University School of Medicine, lipid, that's your fats, and glucose levels at age 35 are associated with Alzheimer's disease. Remember what I just said? Aging starts at 27? Real advanced aging? Well, now at 35, we're seeing Alzheimer's disease. So living your best life at 35, ignoring cholesterol and glucose levels, can impact your chances of getting Alzheimer's disease later in life. That's correct. So what you do today will absolutely impact what happens tomorrow. So you're going for the hamburger and the cheeseburger and the french fries, you're going to have elevated triglycerides and low-density lipoproteins, and that's not good. So the more you do earlier in life to protect yourself, the better you're going to have later in life. And by the way, one more thing from Massachusetts General Hospital. Exercise holds even more heart-healthy benefits for people with stress-related conditions. Regular daily physical activity had nearly doubled the cardiovascular benefit in individuals with depression or anxiety compared with individuals without these diagnoses. The study was presented at the American College of Cardiology's annual scientific session. So exercise every day, and you're less likely, 17% less likely to suffer a major adverse cardiovascular event than those who didn't exercise. That's a big deal. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We have a lot of interesting stuff to share with you, including something that you've never heard, a person you've never heard. Some people in the audience know who this person is. A lot of people won't. But this is the person that was the progenitor. This is the person that caused everything that you're seeing play out with the World Economic Forum, with the Great Reset. This guy preceded Charles Schwab. In fact, Schwab was motivated by this person. So we've got a clip that he didn't know was being recorded. Ah, that's interesting. And oh, by the way, for all of you in Canada who love Trudeau, well, the rest of the world doesn't. Yesterday, Trudeau was at the European Union, and one of the speakers, one of the leaders, got up to speak, And we have that clip. It's only about 30 seconds. We hear how they feel about Trudeau and his actions against his own peaceful citizens when we come back. I'd like to welcome all of you to our program. I'm Gary Nall. By the way, just so that it's in the proper context, when I just mentioned that Alzheimer's is starting early at 35, it doesn't mean that people at 35 are getting Alzheimer's. What it means is that depending upon your lifestyle, your nutrient intake or deficiencies, you can start the process of Alzheimer's so that you're going to be pushing it ahead and you're going to get Alzheimer's probably younger than what you otherwise would have. So it's just a preventative measure. We're going to go to a short clip. This is a clip that in a person's own words, where it was, there were supposed to be no notes, no messages, nothing coming out of these meetings. You're going to hear a person talking about his friends and colleagues at the New York Times, the Washington Post, the networks, journalists sitting secretly at these meetings, being indoctrinated into a new world order. Yet, if you mention this until today, you'd be considered a conspiracy theorist. No, we have the tape to show that it actually happened. You're about to hear the last of the Rockefeller brothers in an early, well, not that early, in a closed room hearing. Here's what he had to say. Listen carefully what he is saying.
Closed-door meeting of fellow internationalists, billionaire and former CFR chairman David Rockefeller praised his media allies, but his confidence that his words would not leave the room was later broken.
We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity. That the world is now more sophisticated and prepared to march toward a world government.
That these men aim to create a world system of financial control.
Bring it down. There is a world government, the New World Order, the Great Reset, one morphed into the other. And listen carefully what he said, David Rockefeller, that these people, these journalists, publishers, top people in the media, were working with him for 40 years in secret. How about that? Now, why don't you add that to the clip we played about a year ago of the Church Committee hearings where Senator Church brought together the top people in the CIA, and the head of the CIA had to acknowledge that there were a lot of journalists working on the payroll of the CIA. But then one of the people who I also played you a clip of was the head of news at CBS Network, that he had all of these people at the CIA giving him information. He felt for the greater good. Who's good? So if you had 1,200 people working in our media 40 years ago, how many are working there today? Now you start to see why you can't trust what is being said. Verify first. Trudeau, what a person. Remember what he tried to push across? That everyone who in any way, shape, or form supported, directly or indirectly, even from your home, the truckers, peaceful, completely nonviolent, march protesting the different programs that were in place in Canada concerning the mandates. And by their law, they're allowed to do that. He put into place the executive law that not only would have caused them to lose their trucks, to be fined $100,000, to go to jail, even if you were following them on the internet and supported them with a donation of $10. That should have caused the American media to have paid attention, and not a single member of the media paid attention. That's not by accident. The these people are fully aware. But thank goodness, a leading voice at the European Union, Europe's parliament, decided to speak to Trudeau when he was there this week. Here's what she had to say.
Debate violations of human rights, democracy, and the rule of law, which is clearly the case with Mr. Trudeau. Then again, a prime minister who openly admires the Chinese basic dictatorship, who tramples on fundamental rights by persecuting and criminalizing his own citizens as terrorists just because they dared to stand up to his perverted concept of democracy, should not be allowed to speak in this house at all. Mr. Trudeau, you are a disgrace for any democracy. Please spare us your presence. Thank you.
Okay. Good for her. If only we had any journalist in the United States working for the mainstream media who had the same courage to say the same thing about every single president we've had going clear back to Harry, including Harry Truman. But we haven't. That's how captured they are. But unfortunately, for those in this audience, and there are many, who have grown up believing in the principles of democracy and also who share the best of liberal values and the best of conservative values, that you should respect the family, you should respect your rights to what goes into your body or what goes into your mind or your child's mind. When you see an injustice in the traditional liberal sense, you call it out. You do not allow someone because of their power, celebrity status, wealth, to be suddenly given a pass on criticism. For those of us who marched at Columbia University, those of us who marched against the Vietnam War, those of us who wrote articles against it, those of us who put our reputation, of which there were many, hundreds of thousands, but if you were in the media, you were a target. More than the average citizen who can attend a meeting, a rally, and go home, nothing happens. A lot starts to happen when you're considered a domestic threat because you spoke truth to power. So here's what's happening now. The question is, who can you trust? Now, historically, at WBAI, my sister station, where I've been for 45 years, I believed and trusted the Pacifica. Historically, and I was accurate, represented the strongest independent voice of truth. Enormously courageous individuals who risked everything came on to introduce guests that would not be invited on mainstream media and to talk about issues that were highly controversial, and good for them for having done so, because they were responsible more than any single other media of rallying the anti-war movements and the women's movement. And that's one of the reasons when I left WMYC, I decided to go to Pacifica instead of to back to the networks. What has happened is that people that we once trusted, people we once supported, and by the way, just so you know, when I was on ABC for 12 years and WMCA for a total of 6 years, two and a half and three and a half, WOR and WVD for 12 years on Sunday nights, I always used the time to promote different persons on WBAI, even people I disagreed with, because I knew that they had no other publicity or way of promoting themselves, and their audiences were declining. But today has changed. Today, I challenge Pacifica to show that it can be relevant again by taking on topics, yes, controversial, yes, unpopular. But when you agree to support and defend the CIA and regime changes, where millions of people are adversely affected, over a million are killed, when you install fascistic governments around the world and you support that, then I believe that you should consider why your audiences are shrinking to nothing. Your relevancy, 2,000, 2,500 people in an hour listening to a primetime program, and you're dead last, there's a reason. I'm calling upon all of the Pacifica producers and hosts and their many noble ones and honest ones with some outstanding talents, the people on the different community boards that help support the stations, if they have time and not fighting each other all the time, to start looking at what will make the network and the stations relevant again. Here's someone who unfortunately and regrettably is losing that credibility to many, not all, who once stood for different principles than what we're hearing today. And it's not me saying this. I will stay neutral on that point of what I feel. But this is important because this is Jimmy Dore and Aaron Maté, who is now one of the co-founders of, along with Max Blumenthal, of the Gray Zone. And they're two of the most courageous, honest, and downright positive in what they do, reporters. That's why, you know, we play clips from them. This is just one clip, and it's one of these precautionary clips. What can we learn so that people are given a message? Maybe they should pay attention to the information that they're broadcasting, and has it been properly vetted for accuracy? People can make mistakes, in which case then forgive the mistake, and let's hope people learn lessons, unless there's an agenda we're not aware of. Here's the clip. You judge for yourself.
Some more disappointing news from Democracy Now. Aaron Maté tweeted this out, this video, and see if you can pick up on the irony or the contradiction.
The Odessa National Academic Theater Orchestra performing the Ukrainian national anthem during an outdoor concert this weekend called Free Sky, calling for peace and a no-fly zone. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report.
So I don't know if you caught it. Did you catch what she said? She said there, that's the Odessa. Now, that was the scene of a slaughter of Jews in the 40s and the early 40s. And also recently, Nazis and extreme right wingers burned people alive inside of a union hall. And when they tried to jump out, they beat them. So that's where Odessa is. And their Odessa choir is singing for free skies, meaning they want a no fly zone. She said they're singing for peace and a no fly zone. Now, what's the problem with that, Aaron?
If you want peace, then you cannot also be for a no-fly zone, because a no-fly zone also means World War III, and World War III is unfortunately not conducive with peace.
So when they say a no-fly zone, what they mean is let's start shooting down Russian planes, which that's not call for peace. That's the opposite of a call for peace. That's a call for war. We want peace, but how we get there? You got to go through some war. You got to start shooting some shit down, right? So peace, after we shoot some shit down. And of course, Democracy Now! repeats it. Isn't that kind of heartbreaking?
Well, it is heartbreaking. You know, I worked there for 10 years, so there's plenty of heartbreak for me when it comes to that direction the show has taken. Now, look, I'm sure what happened here was a producer who doesn't realize what a no-fly zone is just wrote that down and put it in a teleprompter, and that's what Amy was reading. I don't think Amy actually advocates a no-fly zone, but the fact that this was made it to air, it's just funny. It's just such a funny contradiction. Well, and of course, it wasn't corrected either.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if she endorses a no-fly zone or not.
No, she doesn't.
But the fact that she wouldn't correct that, she wouldn't point out the ridiculousness of them singing for peace and for a no-fly zone is a letdown, that to say the least. And so now people watching that aren't getting they're being propagandized.
Yeah. Look, to me, and I'm biased because I used to work there. And before I worked there, I was such a big fan of it. But to me, Democracy Now! Used to represent the best that U.S. media could be, and that it would constantly expose the manufacturing of consent. Now, on some key issues, not all of them, but on some key issues, it actually is representative of manufacturing consent, because it toes the line. It toes the party line, and it does not cross the sound barrier on issues that it used to actually expose. Instead of challenging propaganda, it often parrots it. And I haven't seen everything it's done about Ukraine, but what I'm told is that there's been basically almost no or even no mention of all these key issues that are crucial to understanding the war in Ukraine. So, for example, the very fact that this war did not begin with Russia invading, that there's been a war in the Donbas for 8 years of Ukraine with 14,000 people dead, and the U.S. has played a major role in that, shipping weapons, blocking diplomacy. That has not gone covered on Democracy Now!, from what I'm told. Also, the dismantling of arms control treaties for the last 20 years, which has further encircled Russia, put U.S. weapon systems inside Poland and Romania. And of course, most critically, and this is something that...
Rodney? All right, we're coming back to me. Unfortunately, we have what is called a computer freeze. But anyhow, it goes on to talk about, and if we get it back, you can hear them discuss it, her support of regime change in Syria and Libya, etc. And they're disappointed on some of these issues. Other issues, clearly she gets right, and good for her on that. Maybe she should have a talk with her producers to see what her position is going to be and honor that position, and in the process also honor what people expect when they tune on. I just wish all of Pacifica would take a moment, all of its programs that deal with social issues, and ask, are we on the right side of an issue? Because if you're defending Clapper, if you're defending the head of the CIA and the head of the FBI and the head of intelligence agencies and their programs, then that's not Pacifica. That's not what it was meant to be. And also bring on the voices who are being marginalized. Bring on Chris Hedges. Bring on Abby Martin. Bring on the people who have the truth and have not compromised on it. As a result, they've been excluded from all discussion. I don't hear people like Dr. McCullough, Dr. Malone, top Orthodox scientists and physicians being on any of the Pacifica programs to talk about what their science has shown. It's just been one-sided. Pro-Orthodox, pro-establishment. My God, you know, it's getting to where you, on many shows, you couldn't tell the difference between MSNBC and a Pacifica program. Those are just my thoughts. We're going to go to a piece now. And this is to challenge those who believe that our educational system is all bad and can't change. It can change. We all grew up with a pretty good, but not perfect, system. We all could use a refresher course on real history versus manufactured history. But Sir Ken Robinson is an individual who has spent his life in education, and he has some very interesting ways of giving us an overview of it now. So we'll go to Ken Robinson.
I moved to America 12 years ago. With my wife, Terry, and our two kids. Actually, truthfully, we moved to Los Angeles. Thinking we were moving to America. But anyway, it's a short plane ride from Los Angeles to America. I got here 12 years ago, and when I got here, I was told various things, like, Americans don't get irony. Have you come across this idea? It's not true. I've traveled a whole length and breadth of this country. I have found no evidence that Americans don't get irony. It's one of those cultural myths, like the British are reserved. I don't know why people think this. We've invaded every country we've encountered. I don't know. But it's not true Americans don't get irony, but I just want you to know that that's what people are saying about you behind your back. You know, as you, when you leave living rooms in Europe, people say, thankfully, nobody was ironic in your presence. But I knew that Americans get irony when I came across that legislation, No Child Left Behind. Because whoever thought of that title gets irony. Don't they? Because... because it's leaving millions of children behind. Now, I can see that's not a very attractive name for legislation. Millions of children left behind, I can see that. What's the plan? Well, we propose to leave millions of children behind, and here's how it's going to work, and it's working beautifully. In some parts of the country, 60% of kids drop out of high school. In the Native American communities, it's 80% of kids. If we halved that number, one estimate is it would create a net gain to the US economy over 10 years of nearly $1 trillion. From an economic point of view, this is good math, isn't it? That we should do this. It actually costs an enormous amount to mop up the damage from the dropout crisis. But the dropout crisis is just the tip of an iceberg. What it doesn't count are all the kids who are in school but being disengaged from it, who don't enjoy it, who don't get any real benefit from it. And the reason is not that we're not spending enough money. America spends more money on education than most other countries. Class sizes are smaller than in many countries. And there are hundreds of initiatives every year to try and improve education. The trouble is, it's all going in the wrong direction. There are three principles on which human life flourishes, and they are contradicted by the culture of education under which most teachers have to labor and most students have to endure. The first is this, that human beings are naturally different and diverse. Can I ask you, how many of you have got children of your own? Okay. Or grandchildren? How about two children or more? Right. And the rest of you have seen such children. Small, small people wandering about. I will make you a bet, and I'm confident I will win the bet. If you've got two children or more, I bet you they are completely different from each other, aren't they? Aren't they? You would never confuse them, would you? Like, which one are you? Remind me. You know, your mother and I are going to introduce some color coding system so we don't get confused. Education under No Child Left Behind is based on not diversity, but conformity. What schools are encouraged to do is to find out what kids can do across a very narrow spectrum of achievement. One of the effects of No Child Left Behind has been to narrow the focus onto the so-called STEM disciplines. They're very important. I'm not here to argue against science and math. On the contrary, they're necessary, but they're not sufficient. A real education has to give equal weight to the arts, the humanities, to physical education. An awful lot of kids, sorry, thank you. One estimate in America currently is that something like 10% of kids getting on that way are being diagnosed with various conditions under the broad title of attention deficit disorder, ADHD. I'm not saying there's no such thing. I just don't believe it's an epidemic like this. If you sit kids down hour after hour doing low-grade clerical work, don't be surprised if they start to fidget, you know? Children are not, for the most part, suffering from a psychological condition. They're suffering from childhood, you know? And I know this because I spent my early life as a child. I went through the whole thing. And kids prosper best with a broad curriculum that celebrates their various talents, not just a small range of them. And by the way, the arts aren't just important because they improve math scores, they're important because they speak to parts of children's being which are otherwise untouched. The second... Sorry, thank you. The second principle that drives human life and flourishing is curiosity. If you can light the spark of curiosity in a child, they will learn without any further assistance very often. Children are natural learners. It's a real achievement to put that particular ability out or to stifle it. Curiosity is the kind of engine of achievement. Now, the reason I say this is because One of the effects of the current culture here, if I can say so, has been to deprofessionalize teachers. There is no system in the world or any school in the country that's better than its teachers. Teachers are the lifeblood of the success of schools. But teaching is a creative profession. Teaching properly conceived is not a delivery system. You know, you're not there just to pass on received information. Great teachers do that. But what great teachers also do is mentor, stimulate, provoke, engage. You see, in the end, education is about learning. If there's no learning going on, there's no education going on. And people can spend an awful lot of time discussing education without ever discussing learning. The whole point of education is to get people to learn. A friend of mine, an old friend, actually very old, he's dead. that's as old as he gets, I'm afraid. So, but a wonderful guy, he was. A wonderful philosopher. He used to talk about the difference between the task and achievement senses of verbs. You know, you can be engaged in the activity of something, but not really be achieving it. It's like dieting. It's a very good example, you know. There he is, he's dieting. Is he losing any weight? Not really. Teaching is a word like that. You can, you know, say, there's Deborah, she's in room 34, she's teaching. But if nobody's learning anything, she may be engaged in the task of teaching, but not actually fulfilling it. The role of a teacher is to facilitate learning. That's it. And part of the problem is, I think, that the culture of the dominant culture of education has come to focus on not teaching and learning, but testing. Now, testing is important. Standardized tests have a place. But they should not be the dominant culture of education. They should be diagnostic. They should help. If I go for a medical examination, I want some standardized tests. I do. You know, I want to know what my cholesterol level is compared to everybody else's on a standard scale. I don't want to be told on some scale my doctor invented in the car. You know, your cholesterol is what I call level orange. Really? Is that good? We don't know. But all that should support learning. It shouldn't obstruct it, which of course it often does. So in place of curiosity, what we have is a culture of compliance. Our children and teachers are encouraged to follow kind of routine algorithms rather than to excite that power of imagination and curiosity. And the third principle is this, that human life is inherently creative. It's why we all have different resumes. We create our lives and we can recreate them as we go through them. It's the common currency of being a human being. It's why human culture is so interesting and diverse and dynamic. I mean, other animals may well have imaginations and creativity, but it's not so much in evidence, is it, as ours. I mean, you may have a dog, you know, and your dog may get depressed, you know, but it doesn't listen to Radiohead, does it? And sit staring out the window with a bottle of Jack Daniels.
You can hear the entire TED Talk by going to prn.live or Progressive Reader Network. We're going to go to another issue in just a moment here, but also you have a chance to call in and share your thoughts on this. The takeaway message for me, because I've been a college educator at the university and college level for 46 years, and I've seen an enormous transformation where you had the colleges filled with teachers, instructors, professors, adjunct professors, etc., who brought their own view of life in and challenged the student, and it was a give-and-take, wonderful learning experience. Today, less so. In some cases, some university, it's all about the woke way of learning or not learning. And on top of that are just level upon level upon level of these administrators who contribute nothing to the overall process of teaching or the student's learning capability. We've really screwed it up, and that's too bad. But we can undo it also if parents start to talk back and students begin to look at where they really want to go, where they have the freedom to learn, and where censorship is not the first thing out of someone's mouth. All right, just saying. Now, Sharon Pride, who I didn't have time yesterday to bring on the show, she just wanted to read something to you, and then we'll comment on it, and then go to your calls at 888-874-4888. And we also have, time permitting, Elizabeth McCormick will read one of your questions that you wrote in. Hi, Sharon. Sharon's been our archivist for, well, the next landmark will be 30 years. Sharon, you have something to read to us.
Hi, Gary. Yes, we received a letter from a longtime colleague of yours at the Institute of Applied Biology, Elena Avram, and I just wanted to share that with everyone. Very poignant and very insightful letter. Okay, here it is. Dear Gary, this letter is long overdue. I have time to think as I have just been, had multiple strokes. I'm bedridden, and not too recently I was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. The very cancer that I, along with other physicians and scientists at the Institute, provided medical therapies for. When you are laying alone in bed, not knowing if you will recover from the drugs that you're receiving, including the one I am receiving tomorrow, plus two additional ones, my hope is to survive to live another day. But if I don't, then I want you to know a few things that in all those years we worked together, I never took the time to share. As you remember, I was your supervisor. I was assigned by the director to oversee your work, to validate your findings, and to provide all of the scientific notes to the director so that your work would be properly vetted prior to our monthly meetings. And one of the reasons for this was something that was not based upon science, but rather jealousy. We had some extraordinarily brilliant scientists working for years, decades, and yet, with the exception of the director and yourself, none of the other scientists and physicians had proven success for end-stage cancers as well as other conditions. Many of the scientists were not able to achieve the scientific and medical breakthroughs that you achieved. It started with one terminally ill patient from Trafalgar Hospital who you knew and whose end-stage cancer, in fact, she was in our hospice unit. Using your protocols, you were able to reverse her disease and give her a new lease on life. The director was intrigued. Over the next several years, you reversed full-blown HIV infection and AIDS in 10 patients. That's when I suggested to the director to give Gary some of the terminally ill patients to work with. And although the terminally ill patients were under the care of the attending physicians, the patients were all on your protocols. Over the many years and decades, countless patients recovered and were able to go on with their lives. However, you were never given the credit for these disease reversals. Yes, science also can be limited by envy and jealousy. That's one of the reasons why the director wanted you to stay on the third floor to keep you away from the internecine policies on the first floor. The director was proud of your achievements, as was I. Not only did you help people with terminal cancer, but other life-ending, life-threatening end-stage diseases. And this is in addition to all the work you were doing saving lives at the Tri-State Healing Center. My hope is that you can appreciate that there were those of us who cared about you and saw your uniqueness. My hope is also that I'm able to survive the next three sessions of chemotherapy and to come to visit you at the anti-aging clinical study in May. I was just thinking, I have worked nonstop my whole life. I can't remember taking a day off. You used to ask me if I went to the opera, the ballet, or Broadway plays, and I would simply smile and say, I will when I have time. But the good doctor, the director, never took a day off, and he lived to be 102. Coming from that same sense of dedication to valuing everyone else's life, I simply thought it would be too selfish to retire in order to provide myself with what I had missed over the previous 55 years. Even now that I am bedridden, I'm frustrated not to be in the laboratory each day. Yet I also agree that I am ready to start the next stage of my life, making only positive, healthy choices, making new friends, and enjoying the great diversity of culture that this wonderful city provides. I am not giving up. Respectfully, Elena Avram, Scientific Director, Institute of Applied Biology.
Thank you, Sharon. I appreciate you sharing that. What's of interest is that same person had three or four strokes 2 years ago, and she thought she would not live. So she wrote me a letter talking about the pharmaceutical industry's power in controlling which projects were sent off for peer review. Mine weren't, and the work I did on AIDS of curing 10 people with full-blown AIDS under medical supervision there, and they rejected it because it was too radical and would challenge Anthony Fauci and AZT, et cetera. What I did not know until this letter is that I thought she died. In fact, I tried calling her over a six-month period. Her phone was answered, but she wasn't there. So I thought maybe, you know, a relative. Never knew anything about her personal life because she was just one of these real hardcore scientists. And she was there literally 7 days a week, as was the director. I never saw him take a day off. And that was her whole work. I'm guessing she's in her 80s now, but she ended up having seven strokes. And then when she survived the strokes, in no small measure because of what she had been doing at the Institute, helping others, applied to herself, she then ended up with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And she's now down to two more chemotherapies. And then I didn't know she was alive. She wrote this. But the takeaway message for me is something that I knew intuitively, but never had any proof of until this letter. Almost on a daily basis, someone would come into my lab and say, Gary, can you see this person? So I would sit with them. I would talk with them. It was always someone with an end-stage disease. And then I would give a protocol. And then she would take the protocol. That would be it. I wouldn't see them again because they all had attending physicians. I'd never met these attending physicians. But I always thought they probably just all died. My protocols didn't work. Now I find out, and there was a subsequent phone call, that yes, a whole lot of terminally ill people survived, but the reason nobody came and told me was because of something she said in her letter, jealousy. We'd like to think that medicine and science and just medical science ethics is that if someone's able to achieve something that you weren't, you wouldn't be jealous of it or envious. You'd acknowledge it, say, good for you. Maybe I can learn something. But that wasn't the case ever in the 33 years I was there. Glad to know it now. And because they took the credit for something that they failed at. That's American medicine, a lot of American medicine today. So it just, yeah, it confirms something. Not that it's any more important than that, but it does say something. Now, let's, time permitting, I'll take your calls. If anyone's on the line, we'll be happy to address your issues at 888-874-4888. And remember, my biggest concern today is, and Richard Gale and I were on the phone till after midnight last night, almost 1 o'clock, and Richard never, never looks at life from a negative point of view. He is also an optimist. And last night he said, I do not like what I'm seeing happening. There are too many converging crises, and the public is taking the wrong side on most of these, and those in power have taken the absolute wrong side and are part of the problem. The media is the problem, and the Justice Department, and all the intelligence agencies, and the major corporations, and BlackRock, they're all the problem. So who's going to correct this? And I said, it will self-correct. And we then discuss what happens when you see something that collapses because there's no way of saving it. You have to have something actually collapse that is so corrupt until something new and more virtuous and honest takes its place. We always believe that everything can be changed for the better. It's simply not true. You cannot change a person's disposition and mindset and determination if they're self-righteous, almost cult-like, and they believe in something. If you doubt me, look at the Inquisition and how long it took for the cause of that, the Catholic Church, to finally acknowledge that. But even then they didn't. Look at Pope Pius XII and his complicity in working with the Germans in World War II. So, unfortunately, a lot of things will collapse. there will be social chaos, and it's coming real quick. And everything they're doing about Ukraine, they're doing with the wrong mindset. On our next program, I'm going to have Max Blumenthal. I'm going to have the people, Scott Ritter, and Mate, take you on a level of understanding this conflict that you have not heard before. Because everything you're hearing is propaganda. Not that the war isn't real. It is. Not that destruction is not happening and unfortunately harming innocent people. That is. But how did we get here? If you don't ask how we get here, we're going to get there somewhere else. We didn't ask any questions about Afghanistan, so we got to Iraq. Didn't ask about Iraq, so we got to Libya and then Syria. And we just keep going. We keep making the same mistakes. So this is the time for the independent thinker to rise up and say, I'm no longer following all of these dictates. Just like he said about students, you know, the student's going to get bored if you have an uninteresting class teaching him rote that doesn't challenge him. One of the things I learned by being an animal keeper with these animal sanctuaries that I've run for over 50 years is that every animal needs some form of enrichment, an enrichment program to make it exciting and wonderful for them to be in that. And when the more you give, the more you do, the longer they live, the happier they are. I don't see any calls up. Rodney, do we have any online? Otherwise, go to Elizabeth's voicemail. George from New Jersey, your turn.
Well, hi, Gary. Thanks for all you do. I had a question on long COVID, and if you have any thoughts on how you can treat it, and in particular, if there's any advantage to taking antihistamines.
Well, they're natural antihistamines. When you eat an onion, it's natural antihistamines. Probably the best antihistamine is quercetin. So apples and apple skin, apple smoothie, but 2,000 to 3,000 milligrams a day of quercetin, along with the same amount of vitamin C, is a great combination. Vitamin C also is antihistamine. But you have to ask, what is going on in your body to create cytokine storms that cause the body to react, especially for those? And the whole idea of long COVID is a misnomer. The person's immune system has been adversely affected, especially if you've been vaccinated or had multiple vaccines. Oh, and by the way, a friend of mine I was speaking to last night, the same person who was telling me about her mother is about to pass, but she's accepted that, and there's harmony in that. Her mother's partner, until a couple months ago, was 106 and a half years old, in vital health, totally healthy, no diseases, exercising every day, wonderful life, got his vaccine, dropped dead. Okay? She said, I believe he could have lived to be 110, and I agreed. Because you can live to be 110, 120 if you make the right choices. So what you're dealing with is you're dealing with a body's immune system that to begin with was probably understaffed with nutrients. It didn't have the right amount of vitamin D and zinc and selenium and magnesium, things that are crucial for your immune system. But then when you get different treatments, or depending upon your age and your comorbidities, how severe the viral attack is to doing its initial damage, you have to be on a really super immune-boosting protocol over at least 2 years to recover from COVID. Even people who recover, they've recovered from the virus and they have natural immunity. That doesn't mean that their immune system is high. It means you can bring it up higher, and that's what's not being advocated. So get on an immune-boosting protocol and watch that help you. Okay? We're out of time. Hope that helps. And I'm going to be doing a program probably for 45 minutes in the next 2 weeks on building up your immune system naturally. Thank you all for listening and watching. Have a nice day.